making TV special.
Venice. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Nothing. To be honest, that suited me just fine. I was 3 weeks late coming out of the womb, in no great rush to join the rest of mankind. Where there were further complications. Screw you up, why not do it yourself? Go fight your battles, go to a disco. You wanna suffer, go to a rock show. Do you follow me? The lives they led, but so many different choices that you've got to make instead. Don't write a novel, a shopping list is better. It's a complicated boogie, and I don't know where they better than
That's the brand new track from ex-Pulp lead singer Jarvis Cocker, and that's the title track from his brand new record, Further Complications. And of course, there are further complications, and that's why I'm here. Officially, this is the B-side of episode 124 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. All the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups that your little heart can handle. We're doing this live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, downtown Portland, Oregon. Came in a little early. Just a little bit after 8 a.m. Pacific Time, May 29th, 2009. And we're going to try and cram everything in to this B-side, all the wonderful, horrible news, because I've got something special coming up on the 125th episode of Media Monarchy. But we've got a lot to get through before we get to that payoff. And I want to start off with a big thanks and a big flashing red sign pointing you to check out my brand new interview with writer, researcher, musician, investigative journalist, Alex Constantine. He joined me on the line Wednesday night via Los Angeles for another special interview episode for Media Monarchy. If you're keeping score, this is the third one. We had Spencer Thayer of ChicagoCopWatch.org. We had Evan Long, the creator of the Columbine Cause. And now we've got an interview with Alex Constantine on the curious crash of Flight 3407. So for the last 20 years, Constantine's work has focused mostly on the unseen hand of the intelligence networks and the powerful role they play in our world. In this interview, we focused on a recent event with many questions and connections, the crash of Flight 3407. When a seemingly simple plane crash claims the lives of people connected to 9/11, private military contractors, the pharmaceutical industry, and even the banksters, sinister forces are at work indeed. So that, plus American idolization and the covert war against rock, Operation Mockingbird, citizen journalism, the Nazi nexus, propaganda, and so much more, please check out and spread far and wide the Media Monarchy interview with Alex Constantine on the crash of Flight 3407. And of course, check out alexconstantine.blogspot.com, aconstantineblacklist.blogspot.com, and more. It's all there for you. The books, the articles, the research. And again, a big thanks to Alex. Another one of my favorites. Another big thanks to my man Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge. My man is under fire in Dante's in downtown Portland, Oregon, where Ground Zero Lounge is performed and produced and presented live every Monday night. Audience participation. Get the news there before you read about it later. But Dante's is feeling the economic crunch, and they're putting some pressure on Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge. To my listeners out there, really around the world, I'm not sure what you can do about putting butts in the seats in downtown Portland, Oregon, buying food and drink and supporting the place and supporting Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge. But to all of you out there, do yourself a favor and check out the latest archive batch of episodes, the three episodes from May 2009. I've posted up the last 3 months, all to archive.org. All the shows are there for you, all the documentation, the album art, the blurbs, it's all there for you. So the latest batch of the Ground Zero Lounge. First, we had the episode on May 4th, Being Green, It's Not So Easy. Clyde points out that some of the more outrageous theories about swine flu are no more insane than the arguments for global warming. The May 11th episode, On the Trail of Iatrogenocide. How are the pandemics, cattle mutilation, and chemtrail spraying connected? And finally, on May 18th, we had Fascist, Unethical, Corporate Knowledge. The U.S. is a corporation. And on this episode, you'd find out how some people are fighting the unethical corporate knowledge with a little thing called the Constitution. So again, I urge you, support Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge, and I'm sure we're going to have more news on perhaps the next movement for the Ground Zero Lounge. Thirdly, on my list of favorite alternative news producers is the latest episode from James Corbett and the Corbett Report, episode 87, The UN Doesn't Love You. I know that may come as a shock to you. Critics of the UN will attack its hypocrisy, its inefficiency, or its occasional embarrassments. But what if there was something more disturbing about the UN, something that went right to the core of the organization? So in episode 87, they follow the exploits of the unlikely high school dropout from Manitoba who became an international player for the UN Global Depopulation Agenda. That's episode 87, and again, linked up for you. Download, stream, spread the word, share, CorbettReport.com. And again, it's thanks to folks like James Corbett and Clyde Lewis and Alex Constantine that we can do what we're doing here. Spreading the word about what's going on behind the headlines and giving you the context and trying to connect some dots and also teaching you how to connect dots. I'm not trying to give you fish. I'm trying to teach you how to catch fish. And I'm still learning how to catch fish myself. But let's now get to another really interesting story that kind of keeps growing and morphing and changing. We've been following, of course, the curious crash that we just mentioned, Flight 3407. The other interesting one, and one that I've mentioned as I track visits to the site, it can kind of turn me on as to what maybe is an important story and what the spooks are looking at. And over the last several months, there has been no story getting more spook attention than the murder of William Bennett. I've posted up part 3 on the murder of William Bennett, Arresting Developments. Now, of course, the flashbacks to part 1, CIA, Contract Killers, Kosovo, and Questions, as well as part 2. But I'll give you the quick thumbnail very quickly. And again, I urge you to go back and check this out. On March 22nd, 322, that's the number on the tomb of the Skull and Bones. But anyway, on March 22nd, in the Lansdowne community of Loudoun County, Virginia, William and Cynthia Bennett were randomly beaten. William Bennett was beaten to death. Cynthia Bennett was severely injured and was hospitalized, but she is now stable and is coming around. So what initially seemed like perhaps random violence, we soon discovered that William Bennett was an ex-CIA contractor, and he was involved in some faulty mapping, and, you know, the U.S. forces accidentally blew up the Chinese embassy in Belgrade. William Bennett was involved in that. So we've speculated and investigated whether or not those connections came back to haunt William Bennett. And as he was trying to hide out in Spookville, Virginia, early on a Sunday morning, the white van rolled up. The speculations, again, were out there, at least coming from the main line, on-the-ground investigations. They wondered if it was gangs. Well, of course, now, part 3, Arresting Developments, alleged gang members arrested in the Lansdowne murder. This from NBC Washington. Two men have been arrested and two more are being held in the murder and brutal attack of William Bennett of Lansdowne. The suspects are allegedly members of or associated with an established criminal street gang, but the crimes against the Bennetts don't appear to be part of a gang initiation or a specific gang ritual. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Office said, and Stephen O. Simpson is the sheriff, the Bennetts were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. Two of the men arrested. One, Darwin G. Bowman, B-O-W-M-A-N, 18 years old of Annandale, Virginia, and an unidentified 17-year-old male from Sterling, Virginia. They've been charged with capital murder, a charge made in crimes that usually show motive. The third man, Anthony R. Roberts, 20 years old of Middleburg, Virginia, is currently being held on burglary charges. He is also expected to receive the same murder charge. A fourth suspect, an unidentified 18-year-old man from the Sterling, Virginia area, is also being held in custody on unrelated charges. The motive behind the March 22nd attacks was robbery, according to officials. A white panel van seen in the area of the attacks was key to breaking the case. It had also been spotted during a gang-on-gang assault in Sterling, Virginia on February 28th. All the suspects are being held without bond. Further charges for the attack of Cynthia Bennett, who remains hospitalized, are pending, as are more arrests. And we see that Sheriff Simpson expects at least a fifth suspect in the murder and attacks on William and Cynthia Bennett. The second bit from NBCWashington.com. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Office expects at least one more arrest in the death of William Bennett and brutal beating of his wife in Lansdowne, despite four arrests. Investigators have executed 20 search warrants and conducted at least 100 interviews, but more police work is ahead of them. We feel fairly confident that there's probably a fifth person. As I've been following this story, MediaMonarchy.com is pretty much the number one result if you Google William Bennett and add any kind of qualifier like CIA or Loudoun County or beating or murder or Kosovo or China. NBC Washington has a photo posted up on one of the articles that we're citing here and have linked up. They have a photo of William and Cynthia Bennett that they actually credit to MediaMonarchy.blogspot.com, which I find extremely hilarious because I just swiped the photo from somewhere else. But thanks for citing Media Monarchy, NBC Washington. So, the site has become a source for the story, and it's kind of amazing to watch that kind of swirl around and develop. There is so much media available for you. I have a massive growing playlist of videos all connected to the murder of William Bennett on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. There's about 20 videos. Most are uploaded by me. I can't do this story justice. Again, I urge you to go check it out yourself. I think it's a little more complicated than just a gang hit, a random robbery gang hit. Because people jogging on a Sunday morning usually have lots to rob. Alleged gang members arrested in the murder of William Bennett.
The case. With all of these suspects, there will be many charges filed here at the Loudoun County Courthouse. Some could have death penalty consequences. Now, from the beginning, Prosecutor Jim Plowman has been monitoring the investigation into the attack on William and Cynthia Bennett.
How would you describe the severity of this case?
Well, it's not like nothing I've ever seen, certainly. And while every case is unique, I would say that this is ranks up there as one of the more brutal cases I've seen as far as the evidence that we've seen at this point.
The suspects charged in the murder, 18-year-old Darwin Bauman. He's from Annandale. He's being held without bond. Named as a suspect, 20-year-old Anthony Rumont Roberts. He was arrested April 15th in connection with the burglary of a gun store in Leesburg. Sources say that Roberts' father is doing time for murder, and that before the father was arrested and charged with that murder, he left his son this note. I leave you all my worldly possessions. Please be good and remember not to be bad like me. There are two other unnamed suspects linked to the attack on the Bennetts. The key clue. The Stone House, a community center in the Cascade section of Sterling. February 28th, a Sweet 16 party here. A fight breaks out. Police describe it as gang-on-gang violence. Some of those gang members make their getaway in a white van. March 22nd, the Bennetts are attacked on that trail in Lansdowne. And when detectives learn that the getaway vehicle was a white van, they get real interested in what happened here at the Stone House. At the Loudoun County Courthouse, a public message of gratitude for the arrest in the attack on the Lansdowne Trail. Though there are four suspects in custody linked to the case, the sheriff says the investigation is still going strong.
We feel fairly confident that there's probably a fifth person, maybe sixth, but we're not as confident about that as we are a fifth person.
It was March 22nd that William and Cynthia Bennett were jumped on that trail. He was beaten to death. She was seriously injured. The motive said to be robbery. The suspect said to be linked to a well-known street gang.
It's hard to believe it just came as a result of a robbery.
Well, it is hard for us to grasp something like that, but we don't think like they do. Violence is their way of life. It's a sign of authority. It's a sign of power. It's a sign of control. So violence is second nature. So to them, it's nothing, probably, to where most normal, decent people, it shocks them beyond belief.
There was a lot of painstaking police work on this case. When it happened, it took them 8 hours to identify the victims. There were only sketchy descriptions of the suspects and a sighting of a white van. Now, a few weeks later, they had this violent gang on the ropes.
Although, yes, it could happen again, it can always happen again. We have no guarantees. These folks won't do it.
We know that.
We know that. We know it's not going to be those four guys.
Violence is their way of life indeed. So we have alleged gang members arrested in the connection to the murder of William Bennett. Maybe this is all there is, but I think it kind of stinks, and I'm going to continue to follow this story. There are many updates from the Loudoun Independent. They've been one of the main places following this story. I have a laundry list of links to them. Perhaps we're going to try and get in contact with one of the folks who's been following the story and see if we can talk to them a little bit more. So again, dozens of links, dozens of videos. It's all there for you. The murder of ex-CIA contractor William Bennett. And now, unfortunately for you, it's time for another brutal blast of headlines. It's the 5/28 news purge. Let's do this thing. 9/11 updates coming up first. 9/11 commissioner Richard Benveniste slams Bush in his new book, The Emperor's New Clothes, exposing the truth from Watergate to 9/11. There's a couple links on that story. Raw story, SIFY.com. Existentialist cowboy has the last chance to indict Bush and Cheney for 9/11 mass murder. 9/11blogger.com notes Cheney recently in his speech. Of course, he can't stop talking about 9/11. He mentioned and corroborates our assertion that he was in the bunker much, much earlier than the official story says. So in his new speech, he pretty much corroborates that. His early arrival in the bunker on 9/11. Janet Napolitano learned her lesson that 9/11 terrorists did not enter the U.S. from Canada, like she had mistakenly said. An interesting one by way of Washington'sBlog.com. Psychologists weigh in on 9/11. A new article in U.S. News and World Report quotes a number of psychologists, one sociologist, and one historian to argue that people who question the government's version of 9/11 are prone to false thinking. Initially, remember that while there are many honorable psychologists and psychiatrists, psychologists helped to create the U.S. torture program and actively participated in it. And psychologists such as Freud's nephew, Edward Bernays, have been central to propaganda efforts for a century. Edward Bernays, the father of public relations. But you're crazy. But a press release notes, of course, that 300,000 New Yorkers could be headed for 9/11-related health crisis. From the Washington Times, 9/11 misleads Americans' views of terrorism. And finally, something we mentioned last week, something I thought we would go into more, but turns out to be something that perhaps is really, really speculative. I briefly mentioned last week that some folks are pointing the finger at an actor named Mark Adrian Humphrey as being the 9/11 Harley shirt guy. Now, again, this stinks of all the stupid infighting and all that garbage, message boards and 9/11 truth bullshit. So I'm not really confident that Mark Adrian Humphrey is the 9/11 Harley shirt guy. However, the link is there. You can read more about this. And it's also important because regardless of who this guy is, you can tell it's phony. He is reading a script. So if you're not familiar with this clip, you better be.
Come out of nowhere and just ream right into the side of the Twin Tower, exploding through the other side. And then I witnessed both towers collapse, one first and then the second, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just too intense.
Perfectly reading a script, getting the official story out there. You must watch the clip. You got to see this guy, and it's obvious that, again, the unseen hand of the intelligence networks were at work on the ground on 9/11, putting the story together. Again, perhaps listening to the audio doesn't do it for you. You got to see the clip of the guy. When you see it, you know in your heart it rings false. If you have any kind of media savvy whatsoever. But let's move to the cyberspace war. U.S. cyber attack console aims to turn grunts into hackers. There's a slew of stories on this. We've got Danger Room. We've got Fox News, Pentagon working on cyber warfare tools for GI, DOD developing portable hacking device for soldiers, that's from Engadget, and National Cyber Range building attack tools for mass destruction, that's from Anti-Fascist Calling. But even more, Tech Radar has U.S. cops and military to get laser guns, of course, conflating the military with the police. The Washington Post has DARPA, and the Google Translation projects are bringing down the language barrier. They're calling it the Tower of Babel. Air Force looks for the core algorithms of human thought. Again, from Danger Room. Obama picks ex-shuttle commander to lead NASA. That's from the Washington Times. Obama shines a light on Air Force's super solar array. There's a video and a talk, a TED talk, from P.W. Singer about military robots and the future of war. That's from DefenseTalk.com. Standard updated for reporting suspicious activity online. That's from Federal Computer Week. And now, again, from the Washington Post, Obama set to create a cybersecurity czar with broad mandate. And I believe if we look at the news this early morning, May 29th, 2009, I believe we see that a new report is out. And it's going to all be about cybersecurity. The Cybersecurity Initiative. Here it is. President announces cybersecurity push 59 minutes ago from the Boston Globe in advance of Obama's unveiling this morning of a beefed up cybersecurity initiative. The White House put out a summary and list of attendees. The other bit, along with the cybersecurity, is, of course, bioterror. The two things we've been talking about endlessly on this show of what they're prepping us for, whether it was going to be some kind of bio attack or some kind of electronic 9/11 event. It looks like they're working on both. Long-awaited cybersecurity report to arrive this morning. And again, that's from a few days ago from Federal Computer Week. Obama's SCOTUS pick schooled in cyber law. That's Sotomayor, Sotomayor. That's the new vaunted appointee to the Supreme Court, perhaps. And a few more notes on that as we go. But that's the latest big phony left-right debate. Everyone's up in arms and she's this and she's that and yada yada. WWF. Viral video hoax or proof of impending cyberpocalypse. A video. Urban hack attack. That's from Threat Level. A few notes on the solar cycle 24, solar flares and social collapse, and the cost of electric grid failure from the 2012 solar storms is avoidable. Those two notes, as well as another one about Kennedy, linking the U.S. and USSR lunar missions with classified UFO files. Those stories could, of course, only come from the Exopolitics Examiners. Examiner.com, Honolulu, Exopolitics, as well as Seattle. Getting all our strange cyberspace war stories from wherever we can, my friends. The drug war. And of course, like any of our phony wars, when we declare a war on something, we only have much, much more of it. United Nations wants a flood of drugs in Afghanistan to help devalue opium. That's from The Guardian. U.S. forces seize almost 15 tons of narcotics, including opium, heroin, and morphine. That's from Cryptogon. And finally, from McClatchy, medical evidence on marijuana blows both ways. And now the Econo Crash. The new financial world order. Topping it off, the BBC notes that revolution is in the air, noting historical precedents that perhaps our misleaders in charge should maybe look around and say, the people might get mad. But you're only going to get mad about rigged American Idol results, right? We'll get to that. Trouble ahead. Millions of mortgages will ratchet upward soon. That's from Newsmax. Dollar hits four-month low against the euro, of course, after Federal Reserve spokesmen were out bad-mouthing the dollar. They come out and talk bad about the U.S. dollar, and it goes down. Mission accomplished. That's from Bloomberg. Recession turns malls into ghost towns. Dead malls to grow to 100 nationwide. This is also a story that I want to get more into. And in a way, as I've noted, I won't be sad to see the mall paradigm go. Dead malls. Who's to blame for the tent people? That's from Information Clearinghouse. Schwarzenegger plans to completely eliminate welfare for families in California? Question mark. That's from Cryptogon. HR 1207, Ron Paul's bill to audit the Fed, is still gaining serious momentum. We've been noting that before. It now has many, many, many co-sponsors. Two Illinois banks seized last Friday. We will see, I'm sure, more this week. 36 so far, not counting what we may see today on May 29th. When it's time for residents to leave foreclosed homes, deputies show up. That's from the Los Angeles Times. China has warned that the Federal Reserve is overprinting money. That's from the Telegraph. Speaking the truth. JFK's executive order 11,110 remains in effect today. That, of course, concerns Congress and their power to control our money supply, not the private Federal Reserve. Rising unemployment raises threat of social crisis is from Reuters. But a video from the Associated Press in their series they refer to as the first person getting ready for the worst.
Baking powder.
I have a year's worth of food for myself and my family. It's the stored food, just preparing for if there is a disruption in our food supply. Grains. I can make bread. I have a water filter. If there is a problem with food in the stores, then I won't be down there, fighting with other people. I've already taken care of my needs and my family's needs.
I got cornstarch, salt.
I can see happening out-of-control inflation based upon the Fed printing many trillions of dollars irresponsibly. I can see that the credit crisis is causing the farmers difficulty getting loans, so they plant their crops.
One author has numerous books, Cooking with Dried Eggs, Cooking with Beans and Rice, Powdered Milk.
I have purchased a motorhome just in case, you know, things got really bad in the urban centers. I would have a chance to take some of my food and supplies and move to the rural country.
Will it come to that? I don't know for sure. But if you watch that video and you see what that guy has, you'll think that you're so not prepared. Waterboard, the Fed, that's from Counterpunch. General Motors' first hybrid car was in 1969. That's from gas2.org. Of course, noting that they shelve the better technologies. But blame you for your carbon footprint. You're driving too much. IRS tax revenue falls along with the taxpayers' income. That's from USA Today. We also have Toledo police layoffs leading to a wave of gun buying.
Pistol consists of three major components.
Jonna Ewing is spending the day at a concealed carry class. She's been thinking of getting a gun for a while, but decided now's the time because of police layoffs.
I just don't feel safe with the amount that they're laying off. I think it's going to be a longer respond time.
She's not alone. In fact, someone in Jonna's class wears one of those infamous police t-shirts. Says, I called 911 and all I got was this garbage can out after TPD cuts.
The trigger, the cylinder itself, that's all part of the action.
Tom Urbanski runs Ski's firearms training. He teaches concealed carry classes, and for him, the police layoffs mean big business.
People are panicking. They're figuring the only way they can protect themselves is for them to protect themselves. My business is booming.
Urbanski says since the presidential election and the collapse of the economy, people have become more interested in owning guns. He says locally, the police layoffs and recent attacks on the elderly are only fueling the fire, especially for senior citizens.
They don't have much support out there. You know, their family is not visiting often, so they're having to be their own protectors, and so I'm seeing an increase in the elderly.
For Toledoans like Jonna, having a gun and knowing how to use it means she'll sleep just a little better. In Toledo, Colleen Wells, News 11.
Americans' credit scores fall as they struggle to pay the bills is from USA Today. Tiny Tim Geithner to meet top Chinese leaders. That's from the AFP. Microchipping your money is a scary one from JournalGazette.net. Again, with Schwarzenegger targeting welfare and healthcare in the new round of cuts, Staples profits have fallen 33% in the first quarter of 2009. More on Bilderberg 2009 and their plans for the year, remaking the global political economy. That's a great article, a long one, on global research from Andrew Marshall. The Washington Post has once considered unthinkable U.S. sales tax gets a fresh look. And again, suburban survivalists, economic crisis spurs the spike in suburban survivalism. That's again from Cryptogon. And the last two notes on big business blowing up. Time Warner dumping AOL. Toys R Us has gobbled up FAO Schwartz. Those are both from the Washington Times. But it's now time to go global geopolitics. Role of British diplomats in Tamil Tigers leaders' failed surrender bid. We have to hit this link. Over to The Guardian. A disturbing yet strangely funny. And again, when we laugh at the death and destruction in the world, we're not trying to be cold and callous, but anyway, British diplomats were involved in last-minute attempts to secure the surrender of two of the Tamil Tigers' most senior political figures as the war in Sri Lanka reached its climax, one of the UN's top officials revealed. The plan, however, backfired spectacularly when the two men were shot dead as they tried to give themselves up to the Sri Lankan army. So much for British diplomacy. Cheney goofs on Israel. Ray McGovern notes on Consortium News that, again, in Cheney's recent speech, he says, well, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they hate us and yada, 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 our love of Israel. And yeah, Guards let Mexico inmates escape. That's from the BBC. Obama and JFK both pressuring Israel to limit nuclear capability. Are they? Did they? Really? There's also a video that goes along with that asking the question, is Israel in danger? They basically go around on the street and ask people if it's a big scary thing. Poland expects Patriot N09 and a U.S. yes to the missile shield. That's from Reuters. As Israel rages, U.S. plans for Iran war re-emerge. That is from Press TV. That is out of Iran. PressTV.ir. Half of Israelis back immediate strike on Iran. That is from the AFP. Israel to ignite all-out regional war? Question mark. Again from Press TV. How much cash have we wasted in Afghanistan? Asks Danger Room. Pakistan risks human catastrophe. That is from Al Jazeera. The U.S. killed 97 Afghan civilians in 48 hours. Again from Press TV. And one we must explore a little more. Again from PressTV.ir. Shell Oil human rights abuse case to open in the U.S. The other note we have on this is from The Telegraph. Shell played role in activist executions. Oil giant Shell is expected to come before court in New York to explain its alleged complicity in the 1995 execution of a Nigerian environmental worker, an activist. Lawyers in the U.S. filed a lawsuit against the company for allegedly influencing the trial of environmental activist Ken Saro Wiwa. Big Oil. The cult of Scientology is also going on trial, and they could be banned in France. Two bits, one from Wikinews, one from The Telegraph, and lastly, another note on Israel, this from thebulletin.us, Israel to conduct nationwide civil defense drill. The only note we have on the history mystery tip goes again to The Telegraph, and again, it's the silly, salacious sex stories of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, former intern to tell of affair with JFK. And now we're on to the murder and mayhem. And another update on Flight 3407. This, of course, from Alex Constantine. Idle chit-chat was not a factor. And again, I will implore you to check out my new interview with Alex Constantine on the crash of Flight 3407. Another plane note, however, this from CBS2 Chicago. Illinois Senator Burris's plane made an emergency landing recently. A Georgia father gets 100 years in prison for poisoning his kid's soup. That's from the Associated Press. Washington State has its first death under the new state suicide law. Again, the Associated Press. An interesting note on the suicide of former South Korean President Roh. Last name, R. O-H. And an interesting bit of timing, too, as we reach some sort of conflagration with North Korea. A disturbing one by way of raw story and raw replay, originally from CNN. Girls at a Spanaway, Washington school made a video showing ways... Six ways, to be precise. Six ways to kill a sixth grade girl.
The cartoon is called Top Six Ways to Kill Piper. It includes depictions of five girls shooting her, making her commit suicide, even pushing her off a cliff.
I was horrified. I hope to find kids making jokes, and it wasn't. It was death.
Beth Smith says the cartoon targeting her daughter was posted on YouTube to a Hannah Montana song called True Friend. Piper is a sixth grader at Elk Plains School of Choice. The girls who made the video attend the same school.
It was beyond funny stuff. I mean, it really, really hurt my feelings. I mean, if somebody could hate me that much to make a video about me like that, it made me feel, like, really bad.
Piper's mother contacted the parents of the girls who made the video. Some were shocked. Others were dismissive.
One guy blew it off and said he was making dinner.
Yeah, he's busy making dinner right now. He'd get back to us.
The school district says because of privacy rules, it can't say how the girls were disciplined.
Since then, these students have expressed their remorse about this incident, and we do believe that Elk Plain has been and will continue to be a safe place for students to learn.
Not knowing what happened leaves Smith frustrated because she wants to know her daughter is safe.
My heart aches. I fear for her safety.
Well, they better hurry up on that cyberbullying bill. Think of the children. Generals find suicide a frustrating enemy. That's again from the Washington Post. Again, as we note, suicide rates in the military skyrocketing. A really sad note, Mike Tyson's 4-year-old daughter, Exodus, died after a treadmill accident. She basically got strangled in a cord on a treadmill. A couple notes on that from The Guardian and from NJ.com, and it's also maybe important to note that there is a fairly critically acclaimed new documentary called Tyson by James Toback. A note from Lauren Coleman on the copycat effect, noting the animals attack meme, cat people, enemy action. A Brazil plane crash killed 14, including kids. That's from Reuters. Teacher admits sex with a 15-year-old boy. Police say the mom, yeah, that's fine. Russian girl discovered behaving like a dog. And we have a Tampa Bay, or rather Tampa, Florida. Yeah. America's Wang. From ABCActionNews.com, Tampa woman stops armed carjacker with her own gun.
Adriana doesn't want us to use her last name, but she says she had her own surprise for the man who jumped into her car and put a gun to her stomach. Adriana had her own gun, and she was ready to use it.
I just leaned forward and punched him in the forehead with it and shoved his head to the back of the seat and told him to get out.
And he did exactly what Adriana, who was now in control, asked him to do.
He screamed like a girl and jumped out of the car and almost dropped his gun trying to do so.
The suspect is one of two still on the loose. Police have the third, Akeem Carr, in custody. They say the group has carjacked two people and attempted four more, all in the West Shore area. Police say they are getting bolder. Adriana says they need to be stopped.
I didn't want to have to shoot anybody, of course, especially over a car. You know, that's not my place to take a life, and I sure don't want to take a life. But if it came down to him or me, of course, it would have been him.
And the suspect didn't seem to doubt that for a minute. Now, Adriana does have a license for her weapon. TPD says they don't advocate doing what she did, but Adriana disagrees and says she saved her own life. In Tampa, Rebecca Medina, ABC Action News.
U.S. buys enough guns to outfit the entire Chinese and Indian army. That's from Ammoland.com. Neo-Nazis with bomb parts in Alabama and Maine. From the Southern Poverty Law Center. Chinese spa murder sparks concern. That's from the BBC. And the last note on murder and mayhem is another one of those that you kind of have to laugh at. Passerby pushes suicide jumper off the bridge in China.
A suicide jump foiled when a fed-up driver takes matters into his own hands on a bridge in China. Traffic on this bridge in Guangzhou was tied up for hours as a man threatened to commit suicide. That's when a retired soldier broke through a police line and climbed to the top of the bridge to reach the would-be jumper. He shook the man's hand, then pushed him off. The man fell about 26 feet onto a partially inflated emergency cushion below. He was hospitalized with wrist and back injuries. The pusher says he gave the man a shove because he thinks jumpers are selfish. Both men now face several charges. For MSNBC.com, I'm Dara Brown.
Less chat, more splat. We're still hammering through the 528 news purge, and we're now on to the Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Obama's still debating how to try 9/11 and USS Cole defendants. That's from the Miami Herald. Tom Ridge says Cheney is wrong from Think Progress. The lie Cheney told about A.Q. Khan. That is from Democratic Underground. More on that in a little bit. The Obama dystopia from Global Research. Obama's Guantanamo appeasement plan, again from Global Research. The Deutsche Press Agency notes Obama nominates Hispanic woman to the Supreme Court. However, Obama's transportation secretary wants to, quote, coerce people out of their cars. That's from CNS News. The latest audio report from Dr. Ron Paul, torturing the rule of law. As again, the torture debate has reared its head again. Why there's a debate, I'm not exactly sure, but another establishment news site confirms Obama officials attended Bilderberg 2009. That would be 2 weeks ago in Athens, Greece. Is H.R. 985 meant to protect Obama and his criminal actions? That's from Obamanati.info. And again, we noted this, and it's on Google News now. The report is out. They've done the press conference. Dun-da-da! Obama combines security councils and adds office for cyber and pandemic threats. Do you feel threatened? Sessions notes that the Supreme Court writes the Constitution. Cheney and Rumsfeld pressured the CIA to mislead Congress in the 70s, too. That's from OnlineJournal.com. Radio host Mancow was waterboarded and has, of course, quickly admitted that it's torture. Again, this has gotten a lot of debate, and there's a video, and he staged it during his radio show, and it's nothing. It's nothing compared to what they've done. They're sort of normalizing it for you and turning it into, it's a shock jock radio stunt. I was waterboarded. You had some water poured on your fucking face, dude. Women and children were raped in front of their families. So they're steering the debate. CFR President Richard N. Haass pans questions about Bilderberg and national sovereignty. That's from truthnews.us. Criminal Pelosi notes that, quote, every aspect of our lives must be subject to inventory. She's, of course, referring to the coming green shirts. Obama continues Bush's assault on the middle class. That's from the LA Independent Examiner. U.S. military investigator confirms women and children were raped at Abu Ghraib. WorldNet Daily and Obamanati note that Sotomayor, Obama's Supreme Court nominee, is a member of the National Council of La Raza. And CNS News notes that the White House is struggling to defend the whole racial issue swirling around Sotomayor. And again, I'm not really delving into that right now, because before you know it, it'll probably be scuttled and it won't even be her in the first place. Remember Harriet Myers? The last note on Obamasiah and the Apostles of War, Obama demands right to recruit minors for the military. That's a blog post from atheonews.blogspot.com. The last couple of notes here on the 528 News Purge, it's the Police State International and the War Whores. UK recruits an army of private snoopers with police-style powers. That's from the Daily Mail. Robert Gates, however, says we can just build a bunch of new supermax facilities in the US for all those terror suspects. Japanese university to hand out free iPhones to their students so they can be tracked by GPS. Police mix up a brew of efforts to fight DUI. That's from the Denver Post. Of course, Jackie Smith ratcheting up the UK police state. Home Secretary was warned of MI5's blackmailing of Muslims. That's from independent.co.uk. License plate surveillance grid used to track anti-war protesters. That's from InfoWars. Marines invade Staten Island during festivities. Families still lining up for the Masonicare. The Freemasons have this program, the Child ID program. They put everything about your kid on a little RFID chip. They're just not implanting them yet. Four states adopt no smiles policy for their driver's license. That's from USA Today. UK's CCTV network to track and log all car journeys. That's from Gadget Lab on Wired. We have video and a lot of swirling around. A cop grabbing an EMT by the throat. KTUL, as well as InfoWars again, as well as other videos. Insane thug cops attack emergency paramedic. We also have the New York officer who body slammed a woman and broke her jaw. And if you'd like to see the photos, hit the link. He was acquitted. I'm sure she probably got charged for assaulting him. U.S. plans to press FBI into counter-terror ops. That's from New Kerala by way of blacklistednews.com. And the last note on Police State International is really one to make you pause and think. From nrc.nl, out of the Netherlands. Netherlands to close prisons for lack of criminals. But now really the last couple notes on the news purge. The war whores. U.S. Army prepared to stay in Iraq for a decade, and GIs could be in Iraq after 2012. That's from The Telegraph and Military.com and the Associated Press. Change. DODBuzz.com has the incompetent Navy wasting money. CTV.ca out of Canada noting that a new rule puts U.S. Coast Guard in Canadian waters. And lastly, another note on insane statements from right-wing military writer Ralph Peters, again noting that we may have to kill war journalists. And there you go, my friends. Another nasty blast of headlines. All the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups for you on MediaMonarchy.com. We're in just about to hour number two here on the B-side of episode 124 of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. We move now to a note from Lauren Coleman on copycateffect.blogspot.com. From the copycat effect to the butterfly effect. He notes that on Sunday, last Sunday, May 24th, a new moon was in the sky. A Bengal tiger at the Memphis Zoo bit a zookeeper. A Sikh religious leader was killed in Austria. And then a nuclear bomb was exploded in North Korea. And then riots occurred in Punjab. Copycat butterfly effect indeed. Now here's the bit you've been waiting for. And again, I did briefly mention it in my interview with Alex Constantine, where we do briefly talk about his book, Covert War Against Rock, What You Don't Know About the Deaths of Folks Like John Lennon and Tupac Shakur, and even Michael Hutchence. Is I pose the question that perhaps intelligence operatives don't really need to take out subversive, outspoken, counter-cultural artists and musicians, because there aren't any anymore. Of course, there are some, but not of the stature of a Lennon, or even a Tupac, for that matter. If those guys said, get up, stand up, take this shit back, people would have probably done it. And that's a huge threat to the power structure. But that's a whole other story and lots of ups and downs and ins and outs to that. But we're all fixated on the bullshit that comes on your TV every other night. And let's see if there's more outrage about this than an actual election fraud. And I'm sure if you looked at the statistics, more people probably get involved in the voting on American Idol than they do in their actual own elections. AT&T accused of fixing American Idol vote. This by way of Raw Story and Raw Replay, with links to read more about the American Telegraph and Telephone Company from HistoryCommons.org. But AT&T is being accused of swaying the outcome of Fox's American Idol final vote. Employees of the company are said to have shown fans of one of the contestants how to send in multiple votes with the single press of a button. AT&T is one of the largest corporate sponsors of Fox's hit reality show. There is more from the New York Times on AT&T fixing the American Idol vote.
And finally, a sour note and a controversy in last week's American Idol finale. Fans are accusing AT&T of swaying the outcome. Listen to this. AT&T acknowledges that it provided phones and free text messaging at parties for surprise winner Chris Allen in Arkansas. Its staffers also showed Allen fans how to cast votes in blocks of 10 or more at a time. But there were no such efforts for Adam Lampa fans. Idol texting voting is only open to AT&T subscribers. I don't know. Kind of controversial.
I don't know what to say.
That's explaining to do, AT&T.
I don't know what to say. Yeah. I don't know what, like, we just have to leave it alone. I don't even know what to make of this.
Now let's talk about American Idol. Did you watch? Have you been watching?
Finally,
Steve, leave us alone. Because I finally found someone on the couch that watches like I do. Surprised by the outcome?
I was surprised. And Adam, being from San Diego, I was rooting for him.
Right. Now this turns out that, and here's the moment again, let's see if he wins. He does win. Chris whispers Adam, you should have won. You know, he's better than that. Right there. And it turns out maybe AT&T has something to do, Steve, with Chris winning.
Yeah, apparently in Arkansas, which is Chris's home state, they had a couple of viewing parties. They had viewing parties for Adam as well. But apparently AT&T came to two of them, and they brought some demonstrator phones, and they said, hey, did you realize that you can do something called power texting where you can send one message and it actually shows up as 10? And so apparently using a couple of these demonstrator phones, some of the people at the viewing party in Arkansas were able to cast many, many votes for Chris. And so the Adam camp has gotten wind of this, and they are in they're having a hissy fit because they're saying that's not fair. And in fact, the rules at the end of the program say you can't use technical enhancements.
God, what can I trust? What can I believe in if even the fake shit is fucking fake? So too much time spent on that already, but I think you note the importance of that. So from AT&T and Fox, we jump to ABC Predictive Programming and the return of V.
What was that?
Do you feel that? Tyler! Tyler!
Mom?
Stay where you are! I'm coming for you!
My God.
Since their arrival, there's been no contact with any of the 29 ships now hovering over the major cities of the world.
And Sergeant, I'm FBI. I'm looking for my son.
Everybody is looking
my
for their
son.
Mom, come on!
Don't be frightened. We mean no harm.
Calm themselves, the visitors.
Dude, that's so cool.
The world's in bad shape, Father. Who wouldn't welcome a savior right now?
Heal me, and I got no pain.
It's amazing.
It's been 3 weeks since the visitors' arrival, yet thousands are still flocking to see the motherships in person.
Welcome to the New York mothership. My name is Lisa.
We're all so quick to jump on the bandwagon. Before we get on, let us at least examine it.
They've been printing fake docs, passports, IDs. They cleared out like they knew we were coming.
Ryan, please.
Look, I told you I'm not that guy anymore, okay? Stop calling me.
We need your help.
I want him.
And I would like you to do the interview.
That's the danger.
Gratitude can morph into worship.
They say that you two are obsessed with the V's.
Do you know what the V's? They call it spreading hope. Do you have any questions before we go to air?
Just be sure not to ask anything that would paint us in a negative light.
Excuse me?
I know the real reason you're here, Father, and I am not the only one.
We're honored and privileged to be able to assist mankind with our knowledge and technology.
They've been implementing a plan that will result in the extermination of every man, woman, and child.
If you could speak to the protesters, what would you say?
That embracing change is never easy, but the reward for doing so can be far greater than anything you can imagine.
They gain trust with the promise of friendship. And of course, all they're really doing is positioning themselves as the saviors of mankind.
They're arming themselves with the most powerful weapon out there.
What's that?
Devotion.
What do we do now?
We'll fight.
ABC, predictive programming, and the return of V. Hopefully you guys may remember the miniseries and the short-lived TV series, V. And again, I don't have time to go into it, but I think if you've been a listener of the show, you know how much this kind of ties in to all our recent discussions and investigations on a War of the Worlds psyop, a faked alien invasion, and Project Bluebeam. So probably more on V as it gets closer. But now, we mentioned last week in the updates on the Bilderberg meeting 2009 that ABC News, not long after, reported on this secret meeting of the rich with all your favorite superstars. But of course, no mention whatsoever of Bilderberg, where actual policy gets set. They're giving you the celebrity version. But more information about that, however. And we get this by way of the Wall Street Journal. Elites' secret meeting discussed depopulation. Last week's meeting of the great and the good, or the richest and the richer, was bound to draw criticism. The New York meeting of billionaires Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, David Rockefeller, Eli Broad, George Soros, Ted Turner, Oprah, Michael Bloomberg, and others was described by the Chronicle of Philanthropy as an informal gathering aimed at encouraging philanthropy. Just a few billionaires getting together for drinks and dinner to friendly chat about how to promote charitable giving. There was no agenda, we were told, and no plan for a follow-up meeting. But in an age of fallen wealth idols, it was inevitable that a meeting of billionaire minds would draw scrutiny. Surely all that money and power in one room had to spell trouble for the rest of us. An article in the Times of London headlined Billionaire Club in Bid to Curb World Population, with a link to timesonline.co.uk for you, said the issues discussed in the top secret meeting included healthcare, education, and by far the most controversial, slowing the global population growth. Taking their cues from Gates, they argued that overpopulation was a priority. The article said, adding that, quote, this could result in a challenge to some third world politicians who believe contraception and female education weaken traditional values. Such a stand wouldn't be surprising. Misters Gates, Buffett, and Turner have been quietly worrying about Malthusian population problems for years. Mr. Gates in February outlined a plan to cap the world's population at 8.3 billion rather than the projected 9.3 billion at which the population is expected to peak. He also, of course, let loose a bunch of mosquitoes. One is a stunt, but two to prep you for the idea of flying syringe mosquitoes. Mosquitoes injected with a yummy vaccine for you. But continuing on this Wall Street Journal report, but some right-leaning blogs have started attacking the billionaires as forming some kind of secret sterilization society or a giant ATM to fund abortions. It fed into time-honored fears of the rich using their wealth to reshape mankind in its preferred image. Some are even raising the specter of eugenics. At which point, Wall Street Journal links to PrisonPlanet.com. Secretive rich cabal met to discuss population control. Again, they're kind of diverting you off to pay attention to the celebrities. But these guys are all eugenicists. You should know this. That's their religion. And they throw out all the little footballs for the phony left-right to argue over. Religious issues, gay marriage, abortion. When ultimately, they don't care about those things. Because they actually know that gays don't produce kids, and abortions get rid of kids. That goes along with their eugenics agenda. I'm not making any value or judgment statements on any of those things. What a person wants to do to their own body is their own business. And the last thing we'll note on this secretive meeting of eugenics depopulation billionaires is the video I grabbed on the meeting from Good Morning America, posted up to youtube.com/media monarchy. Now, some of the things, or at least one of the things that I wasn't able to cram into last week. And that's, of course, the Vatican and the Illuminati figuring in a murder mystery. There's a few things here. A report from KPHO, where they note a secret society called the Illuminati has been a topic of conspiracy for decades. The Illuminati do exist, said attorney Jonathan Levy. At the center of a murder mystery is a man by the name of Paul Marcinkus, M-A-R-C-I-N-K-U-S, who lived in the valley where KPHO is out of. Marcinkus was once a papal guard, archbishop, and president of the Vatican Bank, which is how he knew a fellow Italian banker, Roberto Calvi. The Pope's banker, found hung, beaten, and dead under a bridge. This, of course, all ties in with angels and demons and all the whitewash and all the discussion of the Catholic Church and the Illuminati. And so we have KPHO and we've got the video news report. We also have an interesting note of Sean Hannity, the great mind, delving into the Illuminati on his Beyond Belief segment, asking the question, what is the Illuminati?
Hollywood is about to unleash another blockbuster, Angels and Demons, from the same guy who brought you the Da Vinci Code. The story exposes a secret society called the Illuminati. This shadowy group has a very real secret that stretches all the way to Arizona. Investigative reporter Tammy Leitner brings us a story of money, murder, and mystery right here in the valley.
We are under attack from an old enemy.
Fine, Professor Lang.
The race to save the Vatican and all of humanity from the clutches of the Illuminati is great fiction on the big screen. But the powerful organization is no myth.
The Illuminati do exist.
Our modern Illuminati mystery brings us to the most unlikely of places. Sun City, the quintessential retirement community. And among the retirees, a man with a secret. Paul Marcinkus was once a papal guard, an archbishop, and president of the Vatican Bank.
Oh no, he knew quite a bit.
And what Marcinkus knew is at the center of a conspiracy theory that has endured for decades. Attorney Jonathan Levy has been locked in a legal battle with the Vatican Bank for years. He says Marcinkus is the central figure in the mysterious death of this man, Roberto Calvi. Calvi, like Marcinkus, was an Italian banker.
They very well were the Illuminati, at least in Italy. Powerful people behind the scenes, operating in secrecy.
In 1982, Calvi was found hanged from the Blackfriars Bridge in London. It was staged to look like a suicide. Calvi was connected to the disappearance of more than $1.2 billion, much of it belonging to the Vatican and the Illuminati. Eventually, five people would be convicted in his murder, but Marcinkus, who was indicted, eluded questioning with help from the Vatican.
Saints, sacraments.
His retirement to Arizona was arranged with full diplomatic immunity granted by the church. Extradition was denied again and again, and he kept a secret, never speaking to reporters, to investigators, or members of his congregation at St. Clement of Rome in Sun City.
I thought it was kind of tasteless the way people would come up to him in the sacristy and say, yep, what really happened back then? He just kind of smile and change the subject.
Decades of whispers were silenced forever with the death of Marcinkus in his home 3 years ago.
Do you think the secret dies with him? I mean,
I think he was a true foot soldier of the church, and that we'll stand a much better chance of finding out about Kennedy assassination.
We did ask the Phoenix Archdiocese to talk to us about Marcinkus, but they refused, releasing only this statement. Those priests who knew him in his retirement are not going to go on camera and speculate about rumor and innuendo that they know nothing about. And so, the mystery endures.
Tom Hanks is back on the silver screen, starring in the new blockbuster Angels and Demons, which hits theaters today. Now, it's a follow-up to Dan Brown's first highly controversial yet highly successful film, The Da Vinci Code. Now, this time, plot centers around a secret society from the past known as the Illuminati that comes back to seek its mortal revenge on the Catholic Church. But is this historically accurate, or is it just beyond belief? Said to be behind everything from French and American revolutions to the rise of socialism and communism, the symbols on the U.S. dollar. They are furtive, formidable, and undeniably fascinating, arguably the most mysterious organization in modern history. What do they call themselves?
That's Illuminati.
The Illuminati were a secret society dedicated to scientific truth. The Catholic Church ordered a brutal massacre to silence them forever. They've come for their revenge.
The Illuminati. The secret society plays a starring role in the new movie based on Dan Brown's bestseller, Angels and Demons, following up his first box office hit, The Da Vinci Code. Tom Hanks is back as Harvard professor Robert Langdon, and this time he's fighting to save the Vatican from a sinister plot against the Catholic Church, all while trying to unravel the truth about the group that he believes to be behind the plot, the Illuminati. But just how credible is Dan Brown's tale?
To say that that group had these kind of disaffected members who wanted to reunite to get back at the church finally. I just think it makes a good story, but it has no basis in reality.
So the last note here on Vatican and Illuminati figures in Murder Mystery, and again, there are links there for you to do your research. A nice little related update from the BBC. Crucified nun dies in exorcism. A Romanian nun died after being bound to a cross, gagged, and left alone for 3 days in a cold room in a convent. Romanian police noted how members of the convent in northeast Romania claim that the now deceased nun, with a long name I won't try and mangle, she was possessed and the crucifixion had been part of the exorcism ritual. A priest and four nuns were charged with imprisonment leading to death. But still more on the media and the memes and the New World Order. More on the new documentary film, New World Order, from the Independent Film Channel. Russia Today covered the story. New World Order documentary asserts a global conspiracy. A new American documentary is putting forward the suggestion the insanely rich and evil of this world are trying to gain total control. The film says they want to manipulate people through fear and the power of money.
The New World Order.
We know who you are! Come!
What is it?
The New World Order is a global crime syndicate established by the ruling elite, the richest people in the world, the 1% that controls over 80% of the world's wealth. These are the people who want to set up a one-world government so they can have more power in less people's hands.
The New World Order is also a controversial new film that goes behind the scenes of the American anti-globalization movement. It's a documentary focusing on those fighting what they claim is the secret group of a wealthy elite which effectively runs the world. Luke Rudowski is one of those who says he is a fighter for truth.
We're not crazy people. We're people who just want the truth from our government. And it shows our struggle to get the message out to the American people. And it also shows our success, how we've been right all this time and how we're getting more and more popular.
Radio talk show host Alex Jones is the main character in the film. RT got in touch with him.
Yes, the hottest thing in the world right now is the people discovering world government, discovering the New World Order. I mean, finally the Associated Press and other major U.S. newspapers and British papers had to admit that global elites are meeting in secret to chart the future of the world. Now, it's not just the enemy of people in other nations. It is the enemy of all free humanity.
Alex Jones and Luke Rudowski are often criticized and labeled conspiracy theorists. The film itself also got a dose of criticism.
Tiresome, tedious documentary, paranoid and delusional, just some of the reactions of the New York Times to the film. But all publicity is good publicity, and the fact of the matter is that even the mainstream is now paying attention and reacting to talk about the New World Order.
Andrew Neil and Luke Mayer, the directors, both say they sought to remain objective and independent from the claims made in the film and be as fair as possible.
And what we really wanted people to do was just to see these people as human beings, listen to what they were saying, and interpret that for themselves.
Here's a group of people who are just not willing to accept the status quo, what the generally accepted story is. And, you know, I think me, myself, and Andrew as well, I have a strong interest in hearing about people who are willing to take that jump.
The people featured in the film say it'll bring the truth about the New World Order one step closer to being understood by the American public and the world. I'm Stacey Churkina, RT, New York.
We do have a flashback on this. We note, originally back in March, the film New World Order illuminates conspiracy theorists. And, of course, the reviewers haven't been, of course, kind to the film by any stretch. New York Times, New York Press, bashing it, bashing those crazy conspiracy theorists. But we also have an interesting promo from IFC. As they're promoting the film New World Order, they shot an extra piece of Alex Jones driving around downtown Austin, doing what he's perhaps best known for, if you'll recall him in Waking Life, Richard Linklater, also from Austin. Alex Jones is in the film driving around on his bullhorn-equipped audio car. So in this promo from IFC, Alex Jones discusses the new IFC film, New World Order.
The search for the truth begins next. IFC presents Alex Jones discussing his controversial doc, New World Order.
You want us to stand down. You want us to back off. You got the nerve to call us conspiracy theorists just because we're informed.
I'm trying to mobilize the leaders to take action against the New World Order and to resist them.
You want to know why your standard of living is dropping? You know why the economy is imploding? So that a world government run for and by the banks will be who you basically are all owned by.
There's been a financial collapse, and a new bank of the world that you'll pay your carbon credits to and be ruled by is going to save you.
The New World Order is the mortal enemy of all free humanity. God bless you, sir. Ma'am, fight the New World Order.
Hello, ladies.
And the people must rally against the New World Order now. All right, I'm getting warmed up now.
Death to the New World Order!
There's a new film premiering on the Independent Film Channel called The New World Order.
The New World Order going down! We're not just flying!
Your New World Order crime syndicate has been identified! We know who you are, scum!
One of the favorite tactics of defenders of the false mainline reality that we're fed is, well, you guys just want to claim it's all a conspiracy because it makes it simpler for you. What do you mean? I want to believe it's the government because it makes me feel better. That's 1,000 times more terrifying.
Warn everyone you know, the New World Order is dangerous!
Anything centralized will always get bad people in control of it at one point or another.
They finance both sides of every major war!
Cunning, wicked, destructive, psychopathic sadists tend to rise to power.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a New World Order.
But we have more updates. It's always with the updates. And this is, of course, on the latest terror bust. The latest phony plot. Remember the FBI bust a fake terror group with fake bombs and foil the fake plot? We do have people speaking out. And so, on this update post on the Newburgh 4, FBI lies, organs, pot, temple, plot, or not, The first one goes to Copycat Effect, asking the question, plot or not. But from The Village Voice, important work, asking the question and shining the light on the FBI agent on this synagogue case, has a questionable record. The FBI agent with a high-profile role in the May 20th arrest of four men for plotting a terror attack in New York has a pretty interesting and controversial track record. Special Agent Robert Fuller, whose name appears at the top of the federal criminal complaint in the case, had a hand in the FBI's failure to nab two of the 9/11 hijackers, had one of his informants set himself on fire in front of the White House, and was involved in misidentifying a Canadian man as a terrorist, leading to his secret arrest and torture, a case that is now the subject of a major lawsuit. Links in there to openleft.com, as well as more from The Village Voice, more from historycommons.org. More great work from Special Agent Robert Fuller. So there's more from Raw Story, and then, yeah, from Paul Joseph Watson, exactly as we all kind of predicted, the new book for our semi-retarded potheads. Exactly as predicted in the headline story the day before from Paul Joseph Watson, two of the ringleaders in the deadly New York terror plot, salaciously hyped by the media and government officials, have turned out to be just what we thought. There are links in here, again, to InfoWars and the Associated Press and Yahoo. They were high that morning. New York City plotter's lawyer says his Haitian client, that's three of them are U.S. citizens, one is Haitian. So, New York City plotter's lawyer says his Haitian client, Laguerre Payen, P-A-Y-E-N, last name, is intellectually challenged, quote-unquote, and he's also on schizophrenia medication. But from The Nation, supposed terror plot against New York synagogues is bogus, where they at least note, fortunately, that by now this is all maddeningly familiar. Trumped up. Provocateur, informant, entrapment. TPM Muckraker has the Newburg Four and the government mole who betrayed them. And it goes on. From the Times Online, FBI lured dimwits into terror plot. FBI arrests for an alleged plot to bomb Bronx synagogues and shoot down planes. That's the basic overview from Wikinews. The jihadi girlfriends noted that the FBI snitch used tricks and gifts to trick our men. One would be weed. The other, by way of the New York Daily News, whereas that previous one was from the New York Post, informant offered liver transplant for Bronx terror suspect's brother. And the last one from Kurt Nimmo, more terror plot patsies. FBI raid some Chicago apartments. We also, meanwhile, from JTA.org, note that Brazilian police thwart a synagogue plot. The Newburg Four, the latest trumped-up terror plot. FBI lies, organs, pot, temple, plot, or not.
Well, they are accused of trying to blow up two city synagogues and shoot down a military plane. Tonight, the families of the men charged in that temple terror plot are firing back. CBS 2's Christine Sloan has the story.
This Newburg man says an FBI informant tricked his brother into being part of a plot to blow up synagogues.
We wasn't ready to blow nobody up, hate nobody. All he tried to do was just help me.
Lord McWilliams, who suffers from a fatal liver condition, says his brother David Williams fell into the trap because he wanted to pay for the 20-year-old's surgery. And he says the informant, who went by the name of Maxud, kept offering money.
He just said, don't worry, when you go to the doctor, just told me you got money so we get you a new liver.
Williams' mother, who did not want to show her face on camera, says her son didn't have the cash for the dummy bombs the feds say he bought. She says Williams was driven by money and that he never talked about wanting to commit jihad or holy war against Jews.
I met a Muslim brother, a real Muslim brother that's willing to help me help Lord.
The girlfriend of another terror suspect, James Cromedy, tells the same story. Kathleen Baines said not only did the informant get Cromedy tons of literature, including this Osama bin Laden book and prayer rugs, he also paid their rent and got them cell phones. She even saved the informant's number on her phone.
He stalked these guys. He basically pimped them.
Baines says her boyfriend, now being called the ringleader by federal authorities, met the FBI informant at this mosque here in Newburgh more than a year ago. From then on, she says, the man she knew as Maxud came by frequently, always with lots of cash.
He ruined their lives, and he also ruined ours. I just know that my son is not that. He's not like that.
You think you say you understand or may know who the informant is? Why would you figure that that person would be an informant rather than just...
Well, a couple of years ago, someone came to our mosque and he began to talk to different people, asking people to go to lunch, asking people to come to his home, and even asked me if I would come visit him, come to his home. And at that time, we began to hear things about him talking to them, like saying things about jihad and we should fight and we should do these kinds of things. And so the people that came back to me said, Imam, this person is trying to get people caught up in something very terrible here. This person, I think he's an agent or something, because every time he's talking to people, he's talking about fighting, he's talking about jihad, he's talking about all these crazy things. I believe that this person was more than just someone listening in to see if someone had some bad ideas, but I believe this person was someone who was prompting, and trying to get people to get on board with this thing. That's what I believe. Individuals have approached me and told me that this is exactly what this individual did.
So this is kind of like a sting operation, you think?
That's what I believe it was, because individuals approached me and said, this individual offered me $25,000 and he started talking about jihad and this, that, and the other, and he said, I don't want no parts of that. So people backed off of him. And so he obviously finally got someone to go along with it.
That's like a sting, more like a trap.
Trap. Yeah, entrapment. That's what we used to call it back in the early days, the 60s. Entrapment, right. When I look at the pictures of those men, they all look poor. They all look very needy. And to offer them a sum of money to do something, I could see how he could probably capture someone like that. Especially somebody weak. Someone mentioned that about somebody being weak, somebody weak. They really have no concern about anything, but probably living day to day.
And now it's to North Korea. I believe if we glance at Google News right now, well, I don't see it, but I saw it earlier. North Korea on a roll, I believe, launching still more missiles. As I come to you this morning, May 29th, 2009. But another one from Paul Joseph Watson. And again, it's important to get the player straight. Because as you're looking at the world and figuring out the shell game that it is, you got to figure out the players in the whole WWF scheme. So this is an important one with massive documentation for you. From Paul Joseph Watson, North Korea's nukes paid for by the U.S. government. Amidst the cacophony of condemnation from all sides following North Korea's second nuclear bomb test, there has been no mention whatsoever of how the secretive Stalinist state got its weapons in the first place. They were paid for by the U.S. government. Both the Clinton and Bush administrations played a key role in helping movie buff Kim Jong-il develop North Korea's nuclear prowess from the mid-90s onwards. The hypocrisy being spewed forth from all sides in reaction to the news that North Korea tested an underground nuclear device equivalent to 10 times the power of their first test back in October 06 is akin to when the U.S. cited Iraq's possession of chemical and biological weapons as a reason to invade in 2003, having first checked their receipts, of course, since it was again Donald Rumsfeld who brokered the deal to supply Saddam with those weapons in the fucking first place. Rumsfeld was also the man who presided over a $200 million contract to deliver equipment and services to build two light water reactor stations in North Korea in January 2000 when he was an executive director of A.B. Brown. Wolfram Eberhardt, a spokesman for ABB, confirmed that Rumsfeld was nearly was at nearly all the board meetings during his involvement with the company. Links in there to the BBC, swissinfo.ch. Background, of course, on Rummy from History Commons, abletoknow.org, canadafreepress.com, more from the BBC, more from Paul Joseph Watson, and even a nice little flashback from our controlled left back in 2006 when North Korea did their October 2006 first big nuclear test. Even Keith Olbermann noted that Rummy and A.B. Brown had a hand in arming Kim Jong-il.
Nothing like calling somebody part of an axis of evil to get them acting like part of an axis of evil. Our third story in the countdown tonight, North Korea, the first member of the Axis of Evil to hold simultaneous membership in the nuclear club. North Korea's first nuclear test yesterday, coming 6 years after President Bush took office and decided to drop the Clinton administration policy of engagement with the government of Kim Jong-il. A policy that, as reported 3 years ago by the British newspaper The Guardian and also by Fortune magazine, included the sale of two nuclear reactors made by a European company called ABB in 2000. ABB's board of directors throughout the 90s and through 2000 included one Donald Rumsfeld. In the 6 years since then, Mr. Bush has refused to engage directly with North Korea, instead trusting communist China to safeguard America's vital interests. China, one of the few countries in regular contact with North Korea, it has consistently failed to dampen the nuclear ambitions of the North Korean dictator. Today, Mr. Bush showed no sign of recognizing that his signature policy of alienating and antagonizing North Korea has somehow failed to produce settlement.
A few headlines, a few updates. North Korea actually informed U.S. of the nuclear test before it happened. That's from spacewar.com. North Korea fires more missiles. That's from the BBC. The world is powerless to stop North Korea. That's from atimes.com. Ruling party official says that Japan should attack North Korea. And from Danger Room, the nuke test was only the beginning for North Korea. So says the U.S. spooks. But we have four disturbing updates on this story. We'll try and blast through. The first from Danger Room, inside America's mock attack on North Korea. Of course, noting war games, terror drills. In this case, it's called Key Resolve Foal Eagle. F-O-A-L, Eagle. That's a bird imagery for you. The second update from Paul Joseph Watson, state of war between two Koreas after armistice ended. A state of war officially exists again between North and South Korea for the first time since the end of hostilities in 1953, following North Korea's announcement that they would henceforth refuse to abide by the terms of the peace armistice. Quote, the Korean People's Army will not be bound to the armistice agreement any longer, end quote. State of war now between the two Koreas. The third update from the Daily Mail, U.S. raises military alert levels in Korea as North says, we are ready for war. The U.S. and South Korea has raised the military alert levels on the Korean Peninsula after North Korea raised the stakes in its nuclear standoff with the world. More links in there to the Associated Press. And the last note by way of Steve Quayle asking the question, is Korea at DEFCON 1? That being Defense Condition 1. Remember in War Games? When the big board changes? So swirling around this was our recent Memorial Day holiday. So the next posting covers the Obamasiah memorial sacrifice and nuclear threataganda. Of course, giving him the perfect thing to kind of grandstand on. As we see the photo, and you can listen to the speech. I've got videos and links embedded, the whole speech, all that stuff for you. Links to Wikipedia, Swamp Politics, RealClearPolitics.com. President Obama used Memorial Day to call on the nation to give something back to the country to honor those who have made the ultimate sacrifice and those who continue to serve in the military. So, of course, jumping down, the President's Memorial Day schedule was altered slightly on Monday in response to North Korea conducting missile and nuclear tests. Obama said, quote, North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile programs pose a great threat to the peace and security of the world, and I strongly condemn their reckless action. But what about strongly condemning the reckless action of all the private military contractors and banksters and movers and shakers before you who handed you the football that you're now running with?
South Koreans are burning signs and demanding UN sanctions after North Korea claims to have conducted an underground nuclear test Monday, a test much larger than the one in 2006. Pyongyang announced the test, and Russia's defense ministry confirmed an underground explosion in northeastern North Korea, estimating the blast was comparable to the bombs that flattened Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II. Diplomats worldwide are condemning the test.
It's a direct threat against peace and stability in the region, as well as to the world.
The North Korean regime also test-fired three short-range surface-to-air missiles from the same northeastern site where it launched this rocket last month. The North had warned it would restart its rogue nuclear program, conduct an atomic test, and carry out long-range missile tests.
The Japanese government cannot condone yet another nuclear testing.
Australia's foreign minister told Parliament that final confirmation of the test may take several days, but Canberra is proceeding on the assumption that North Korea has conducted an underground nuclear explosion.
On that basis, North Korea is in flagrant breach of its international obligations, is in flagrant breach of United Nations Security Council Resolution 1718, and as such stands condemned.
President Barack Obama says a nuclear test would constitute an act of blatant defiance of the UN Security Council and a violation of international law. He also says it would only further isolate North Korea. Japan's foreign minister says the UN Security Council will meet Monday afternoon to take up the matter. John Belmont, The Associated Press.
So that's Obama, memorial, sacrifice, and North Korean nuclear threatiganda again. I'm just blasting through these now. We're going to finish up this B-side of episode 124 with a lot of notes from foodworldorder.com, sister site to mediamonarchy.com. Swine flu updates, propaganda in the 1918 Spanish flu. We, of course, note at the top the growing list of flashback archive pages on foodworldorder.com and mediamonarchy.com. There are five now. The one we're about to go over being the sixth. We have a video and a report from Russia Today. First case of swine flu in Russia. EcoChildsPlay.com notes that kids who get the flu shot are more likely to be hospitalized. Big surprise. Mayo Clinic study shows that kids who got the flu shot, especially those with asthma, are three times as likely to receive hospitalization as those who did not receive the shot. Australia's swine flu alert level raised. That's from The Age. The history of the synthetic H1N1 flu virus and a not-so-rosy future. More work on the swine flu and its curious connections. That's by Wayne Madsen, investigative journalist, noting the confluence of bioterror and supposed vaccine pharma research, the history of the extraction of the genetic material from the corpses of victims of the 1918 Spanish flu virus who were buried in the Arctic permafrost is part X-Files, part Jurassic Park. After an unsuccessful 1951 mission that involved U.S. biological warfare specialists to extract 1918 Spanish flu genetic material in 1951 from a cemetery in the Inupiat Eskimo village of Brevig Mission, Alaska, scientists made another attempt, a successful one, as it turns out, in 1997. That by way of sunshine-project.org. They resurrected the deadly 1918 flu. Again, whenever we note these labs, they create it. So then they can create a vaccine for it later. We wouldn't need a fucking vaccine for it if you didn't recreate it in the first place and then let it go during a drill or an accident. Spanish soldiers have been hit by the swine flu. That's by way of the Associated Press or rather the BBC, but jumping to the Associated Press, a memo tells Kansas juvenile jails to prepare for a 10-day quarantine. You can go to the Kansas Juvenile Justice Authority and read about it yourself, requesting the staff to start making personal plans in the unlikely event of quarantine. A disturbing one, a video from today on one of the Alphabet networks. Obama pharma admin to implement government flu shot program. If you'll recall, the dead Kennedys made a note about the government flu. But here we have a note about you perhaps being forced in the fall to get the swine flu shot.
But now to a report in this morning's Washington Post that the Obama administration is considering implementing a new fall vaccination program against the flu, a plan that would require Americans to get not one, not two, but three flu shots. Dr. Nancy Kneiderman is NBC's chief medical editor. Nancy, good morning.
Hi, Meredith.
Unprecedented this is. How would this work?
Well, here's the idea. On the first Saturday when we knew swine flu was an issue, the Centers for Disease Control held a conference, and we were already talking, those of us who listened in, about how are you going to ramp manufacturing this new vaccine on top of the old vaccine?
So it takes a lot of time, right? About 5 months.
And the decision was made, if we're going to get the normal flu vaccine to the general public in the fall, to hold it up while we figure out the swine flu was perhaps going to put the entire population at risk. So at that moment, the decision was made, we would go into normal flu production for the normal vaccine, like it is, for seasonal flu, figure out what the swine flu really is, and then perhaps tag team a second vaccine on top.
Okay, so that's why they didn't combine them into one shot. But why two additional shots for swine flu?
For the normal seasonal flu that you and I talk about every year, there's a herd immunity to some extent, so you only need one shot. The new strain, we've never seen before. So that requires sort of thinking like when we give our babies or their first shot. You get your shot, it boosts up your immune system, and then you need a booster. So for the new H1N1 swine flu, for which there's no known immunity in our population, that requires two shots.
I would think, because it's hard to get people to take the original.
As we know, right. Don't we? Since you don't get your booster.
No, I don't. Okay. I might this year, though.
Good.
But now you're asking people to get three. That's a tough sell.
Well, Meredith, I think you've hit the nail on the head. This is going to be a public relations, trust your government and your health officials, public campaign. Mark my word, you and I are going to be talking about this a lot between now and fall. So I think what the government is likely going to do is urge people to early on get their normal flu shot and then trust the scientists to say the swine flu is for real, get these other two. Now, we've yet to hear the clear, concise direction from the government, so I don't think we should jump on the bandwagon before we hear what the recommendation is. But if they do believe that this swine flu could be a real uptick in severity, you're going to see a massive public education campaign.
But we trusted the scientists back in 1976 with the original swine flu shot, and a lot
and
of people
got sick.
Right.
Not only that, some people died, some people were paralyzed.
From the shot itself.
And people remember the swine flu vaccine as a terrible disaster. This government, these manufacturers, want to make sure that does not happen again. But you bring up a very important point. Just because something works doesn't mean it's safe. And that rush to market is going to mean that we're going to have to prove that, yes, it will keep people from getting sick, and that the shot itself won't hurt anybody.
All right,
more on this, I'm sure, all summer and early fall.
Absolutely, Dr. Nancy Simon. Thank you
so much. I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
That's okay.
The last blast of updates and headlines on the swine flu propaganda. U.S. pledges $1 billion for the vaccine. That's from the AFP. U.S. asks firms to make swine flu vaccine. That's from the Washington Post. And we note that criminal big pharma bio terror industry stalwarts Baxter, they're hard at work. We've noted their work before. Swine flu infected GIs come back to the U.S. That's from military.com. In the wake of the H1N1 pandemic, Mexico's ailing economy is in critical condition. That's from Global Research. Margaret Chan, director of the World Health Organization, says that the pandemic alert level will not be raised. But she also notes that the world should prepare for severe flu. That's from Reuters. The other one from Wikinews. And again, from Reuters, them rethinking the criteria for Phase 6. Phase 6 being DEFCON 1. Ecuador closes New York consulates over swine flu. That's from Press TV. H1N1 synthetic flu may be test run for H5N1 avian flu. More work from Wayne Madsen. And the last note from the Washington Times, Illinois man dead from swine flu. It's not a hoax. And just so you don't think they wouldn't do this, from Alternet, government experiment on U.S. soldiers. Shocking claims come to light in a new court case, or at least it comes to light for the mainline. Government scientists mess with their minds. Now vets who were the subject of top-secret experiments want answers. Their stories are a staple of conspiracy culture. Broken men suffering hallucinations and near-total amnesia who say they are victims of secret government mind-control experiments. Think Manchurian Candidate. Think conspiracy theory. Journalists are a favorite target for the paranoid delusions of this population. So is Gordon Erspammer. And the San Francisco lawyer's latest case isn't helping him to fend off the tinfoil hat crowd. He's filed suit against the CIA and the U.S. Army on behalf of the Vietnam Veterans of America and six former American soldiers who claim they are the real thing, survivors of a classified government test conducted at Army's Edgewood Arsenal in Maryland between 1950 and 1975. That government scientists conducted human experiments at Edgewood is not in question. The program involved testing of nerve agents, nerve agent antidotes, psychochemicals, and irritants. Quote, that's a quote from a 1994 General Accounting Office report with a PDF for you. So it's always funny to note that they make the jokes about the conspiracy theorists and the tinfoil hat crowd, but and on the way down they have to basically go, well, this, yeah, of course, it's all totally real and declassified. Well, my man Zach got one, but the e-cigarette firm claims that the big pharma industry is behind the proposed ban. This coming from TGDaily.com, a company marketing so-called electronic cigarettes, claims that a proposed ban on the products is being orchestrated behind the scenes by the pharmaceutical industry. E-cigarettes.choice.com notes that Senator Lautenberg, connected to the FDA, connected to the WHO. There are a lot of links in here. I haven't quite sussed it all out, but there are links to Lautenberg's Senate.gov site, as well as more from the Associated Press, from Breitbart, and even a little more on Wikipedia about e-cigarettes. Cigarettes without the smoke. Now, the last few things from foodworldorder.com. We'll make a quick note now and go into it a little more here in a minute. But we've noted in this posting of headlines, chemo, cola, and the pro-life Gardasil greenwash military zombies, the quackery of chemo, gunpoint medicine, and Daniel Hauser. Chemo case raises parental rights issue. Again, more on that in just a moment. U.S. winter wheat forecast down about 20%. Why isn't there a Gardasil for men? That question coming from the U.S. News and World Report. Drinking large amounts of cola can cause paralysis, doctors warn. That's from the Telegraph. And the New York Times notes that so does a tempting tax target. Six urban farms from U.S. coast to coast, that's from sustainablog.org. No child left inside would spend $500 million to greenwash our children. A poll, and I believe I've mentioned this before, more Americans are now pro-life than pro-choice, again, noting the swaying back and forth of the phony left and right. When one party's in favor, the other party gets energized. Central Texas farmers voice concerns on the USDA track and trace program. That's from news8austin.com, of course, tying in with the National Animal ID System. The U.S. military is heavily armed and heavily medicated, notes MSNBC, and Time asking the question, zombies, do they exist? They basically note sort of voodoo zombies through drugging and not the 28 days later style raid zombies. coming soon to a countryside near you. So more on the mother and child who fled chemo. They have returned to Minnesota. This is from the Associated Press. An attorney says a 13-year-old Minnesota boy who fled the state last week to avoid cancer treatment has returned and is being evaluated by a doctor. More updates, more on that story from the Associated Press, from Wikipedia, from StarTribune.com, and the Washington Times. Mother and child who fled chemo return to Minnesota.
This is CNN Breaking News.
We have breaking news. We are watching a live news conference in Minnesota about the case of a 13-year-old boy who was diagnosed with cancer. He and his mother fled authorities so that he would not have to undergo chemotherapy. They are now back in Minnesota. A spokesman for the Brown County Sheriff's Office is now speaking. Let's take a listen.
No media contact at this time. The Brown County Sheriff's Office would like to thank all the law enforcement agencies that have assisted in the investigative efforts in this case, including the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the FBI Minneapolis Division, Mankato Division, and the Minnesota Office, the FBI San Diego Division, the FBI Los Angeles Division, local law enforcement, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, Interpol, Baja California State Preventive Police, local California authorities, and the California Department of Justice, and anyone that we may have missed. I would also like to personally thank all employees of the Brown County Sheriff's Office for their efforts. Again, a special thanks to Attorney Jennifer Keller and Alan Karen Pizzuto of Asgard Media. We would also like to thank all the individuals that have reported leads in this case and the media for reporting and keeping the public informed. It is a good day as Daniel and Colleen Hauser have been safely returned to Minnesota. The Brown County Sheriff's Office no longer has any involvement in this case as the safe return of Daniel and Colleen Hauser has been accomplished. The Brown County Sheriff's Office cannot comment at this time on any possible charges that may be filed against any persons related to this case. There will be no more press conferences scheduled on behalf of the Brown County Sheriff's Office in this case involving Daniel and Colleen Hauser. Thank you.
A nice local note, this from ecolocalizer.com. Wild girl forages for food in urban Portland. You could call Becky Lerner Oregon's answer to Survivor Man, Les Stroud. Only she's not a man and she ain't been stranded left in the middle of nowhere. But this wild girl, as she calls herself, is in the middle of a week-long adventure in which she's eating only food she can forage or catch on the wild streets of Portland. And she's blogging about the experience at culturechange.org. Wild girl forages for food in urban Portland. The last blast of headlines on foodworldorder.com. Fast food, first-time moms, and the omnivore's dilemma. We first note from the Washington Post on their All We Can Eat blog that Omnivore's Dilemma has been pulled from a required reading in a Washington State University. U.S. Forest Service closes caves over the bat-killing disease. We've noted that before, this time from Kentucky.com. The 66-year-old first-time mom. This is from EcoChildsPlay.com. And, of course, it ties in with fertilization and even eugenics. And, of course, recalling the recent case of Nadia Suleman and the octuplets. TheLocal.de has Red Bull Cola banned for containing cocaine. That coming by way of Germany. Fast food makes kids stupid. Again from Eco Child's Play. Critics say tobacco candy geared towards kids. That's from Raw Story. ADHD treatment causes young boys to grow tits. And it's not fucking funny, and I shouldn't even really callously joke about it. 3news.co.nz, and you can see the photo and you can see the reports. But sure, just shoot your kids up with drugs. The United Nations has named 22 new biosphere reserves. Those, of course, will be taken over when it's blue helmet time. And the last note from the BBC, glowing monkeys to aid research. And I'm not even going to go into that. So as we glance at the end of this B-side of episode 124 of MediaMonarchy.com, Obama to name White House cyber official, Germany to face tough EU scrutiny over Opel financing, and an off-duty officer is fatally shot by other police officers in Harlem that last night, that by way of the New York Times. So there we go. We are amazingly up to date. And it's a good thing, because coming up next is a big treat for you. I'm excited to do it. It's the 125th episode of Media Monarchy, a musical monarchy. So until then, my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same. Out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.